Astronaut Down, Amy Lynn, The Gun Show, and Trust. John Pear is having a CD release party at the Mango Lounge at 6 to 10 p.m. And here's today's thought of the day. When I'm feeling down, I like to whistle. It makes my neighbor's dog run to the end of its chain and gag himself. Thank you for listening to WUSB Stony Brook and to the Concert Billboard.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6:01. Time for Off the Wall. This weekend coming up, of course, is the Last Hope Conference taking place at the Hotel Pennsylvania in New York City. More details at www.hope.net. But first, a look back at some history.
It went mostly unreported, but in the world of computer hackers, it did not go unnoticed. Last month, hackers broke into the computer system of a nuclear weapons company in California. They took control of the system and used it to store and distribute hardcore pornographic pictures. It's further proof of what computer security experts have been saying for a couple of years now. Hacking has hit the mainstream. It's no longer the work of a few nerds or geniuses. What's grown up around these hackers is a new cyberspace culture, a kind of teenage computer macho. And it comes with its own language and its own ethics. Sunday morning contributor Rodney Palmer had a chance to interface with that culture firsthand. The normally reclusive hackers held a conference in a New York City hotel, and that's where his story begins.
I am a hacker, and this is my manifesto. Did you, in your three-piece psychology and 1950s techno brain, ever take a look behind the eyes of a hacker? Did you ever wonder what made him tick, what forces may have molded him? I am a hacker. Enter my world. The world of the electron and the switch.
Exorcist! Biohazard! Narcan!
Roll call at the Hackers on Planet Earth Conference, or CON as the hackers refer to it. There are more than 500 of them, almost entirely young men in their teens and early 20s. They've stuffed themselves into the top floor of a big old hotel in downtown Manhattan.
Ludacris! Metal Store!
Every one of them has a handle, a pseudonym they use to remain anonymous or to make a statement about themselves. Doctor Who takes his name from a British science fiction TV series. The main character is a renegade time traveler. This Doctor Who, living in 1994, says hacking into computers is not the work of power-hungry madmen trying to start World War III. For some, it's simply become part of growing up.
When you grow up in some dumbass small town, there's no connectivity to the world as a whole, and you have to do something to get there. And the only way to get from point A to point B, you know, to make a call, to get into even the Internet today, the place that I grew up, it's still a long-distance call to get onto the Internet. It's weird, but... The only way to do it is to not pay. And, you know, once you started, you know, like, breaking little laws, like toll fraud or whatever, everything else just seems to just kind of like, oh, well, I'm already a criminal, and just kind of go downhill from there. It starts snowballing, you know. I mean, some people it gets really out of hand.
Doctor Who admits he's called a lot of places using other people's telephone lines. It's what he calls a dark tool, something he knows is wrong, but necessary for those who can't afford the cost of connecting to the Internet from a small town.
I was just a loner, and at the time, I was kind of like a freak. I was a punk rocker. And
Brian Oblivion is sitting next to Doctor Who. Brian's a very clean-cut man. He's in his early 20s, but he's been hacking for about 10 years, and he still remembers feeling a rush when he illegally logged on to his first computer.
The first time any young person grabs a taste of power, at that point, I think that person can sway either way. As soon as you take the bite of the apple, I mean, you can just You can either just go out and ruin systems, or you can use that knowledge to worm deeper into the net or into the system you're going into or what have you. But like I said, the first time a person does it, they're going to screw up and seem malicious, or who knows, maybe they'll just keep doing malicious things until they become of age and say, well, gee, maybe what I'm doing is really bad. Because when you're young, you don't think about consequences at 16 or 17. You think you're going to live forever, usually, at that age. I realized my mortality. But back then I didn't, and I didn't care. Hated humans at the time, actually. I wanted to tear it all down and start over. And did malicious things, but you can't tear it down. You have to work with it.
There are a few in the crowd here who are worried about the hackers who still want to tear it all down. They look like agents from the FBI or the Secret Service. One of them even stands up at the front of the conference room and snaps a picture of someone who admitted to breaking into computers. But even though he knows his picture is being taken, he can't resist, because bragging is as much a part of being a hacker as working at the computer.
This right here is a COCOT. Stands for Customer-Owned Coin-Operated Telephone. The way to fool these things is to dial an 800 number, and you start blowing in the receiver, just like, and you'll get a waffling noise. It's trying to reset itself, but it can't do it. And it'll give you a clear line.
This man calls himself Ludachrist. He's dissected two full-size payphones on the display table here. Stolen payphones are like an honor badge. Some of these guys are fiercely competitive, as if it's really all about who has the biggest electronic gizmo or the most illegal contraption. On the hierarchical scale of outlaw hacking devices, Ludachrist payphones are impressive, until somebody walks by the table with an even fancier piece of contraband.
It's an AT&T Cat XL, matte black. It has a 40-character or 40-column by 16-line screen, has full TTY emulation, 9600 baud modem, and full ASCII and X modem download capabilities. For those of you who don't know what that means, it means you can do lots of illegal stuff on it real quick.
This guy has a huge knapsack on his back, but he strapped the illegal phone equipment to the outside on display. Ludachrist is outdone, but he knows he hasn't really lost anything. The one-upmanship is just part of a never-ending game.
We call it geek posturing. It's kind of like geek machoism. We, it's like, oh yeah, well I hacked this, well I hacked this, and I did this. You know, it's just a lot of fun.
Ludachrist doesn't look like a geek. He's built like a street fighter. Part of his head is shaved. The other part has long black hair hanging past his shoulders. He pulled his muscle shirt aside to show me his conference ID badge. He pinned it through his left nipple. About a dozen tattoos intertwined down his thick arms, and the most colorful one is cartoon character Wile E. Coyote, super genius, every kid's Saturday morning hacker hero. Ludachrist reeks of pride. But with that pride, there is also a unique, almost malicious sense of humor.
Well, a friend of mine broke up with his ex-girlfriend, and we broke into the phone company's computer and changed her number 5 times in 1 week. We rerouted all the calls for information from 215 to our house for a day. And then we changed the designation on our line from a regular residential phone to a coin phone, so that every time she picked it up, they asked her to deposit 25 cents. I think that was one of the more fun ones.
It might sound funny, and on a certain level, Ludachrist thinks it's a practical joke, but there are consequences lurking in the gray areas between the right and the wrong of computer hacking.
We got really drunk last year, and somebody called NASA on my phone line, and the FBI came and took my stuff.
Once inside the NASA computers, Ludachrist says his friend logged on to the heating system, and when he turned the temperature up to 110 degrees Fahrenheit, NASA traced the call and phoned the FBI.
They just showed up one day and said, yeah, we have a search warrant. They came through my house. They took almost every piece of equipment I had. They almost took my CD player, but I told them, it's a CD player, get a grip, you know? It's a rack system, go away. So they were a little annoyed.
You have to understand, these guys don't think they're doing anything wrong. They consider themselves warriors in the battle for freedom of information. They start off behaving like rebellious teenagers, But the rebellion soon turns into a kind of pop philosophy. The room goes dark at the conference, and at the front of the room, a strobe light flashes through the dark into the eyes of 500 computer hackers.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Shut up!
From the stage, a recording of punk rock icon, Jello Biafra. He's a hacker role model, a self-styled anarchist philosopher, a prophet outspoken against large governments and corporations, and a master of exposing modern-day conspiracies. His punk band, the Dead Kennedys, was a household name among teenagers who grew up in the 80s, the teenagers who grew into many of the young men who are listening in this room.
Anyone failing to attend required worship services on Sunday will be promptly arrested and dispatched to a re-education resort. Stay in your home. Remain calm. The number one enemy of progress is questions. National security is more important than individual will. Use only the drugs prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy. Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now mandatory. Be happy. At last, everything is done for you.
I am a hacker. We explore, and you call us criminals. We seek after knowledge, and you call us criminals. We exist without skin color, without nationality, without religious bias, and you call us criminals. You build atomic bombs. You wage wars. You murder. You cheat. And you lie to us and try to make us believe it's for our own good. Yet we're the criminals.
This computer police scanner is one of the few things for sale at the Hackers Convention. It's designed to listen in on emergency broadcasts. This one's tuned to the New York police frequency. But one of the hackers says that, with some modification, he can use this machine to retrieve other people's phone conversations, or maybe even the password to their voicemail. But between all these pranks, the boasting, the anarchistic prose, there are ethical questions here which some of the people try to grapple with. Those aren't the rebellious teenagers, they're the ones in their 20s, who begin to ask these questions once their conscience catches up with them. They know they're breaking the law, but they don't want to become villains.
The man with the gun.
Over.
Dave Goldsmith just turned 20. He started to think more about hacking after he was convicted of toll fraud, using someone else's phone line to make a long-distance call. He says that's just what they were able to bust him for. He'd been hacking for years when the police burst into the Goldsmith family home at 6:30 one morning. They spent hours combing his room and removed everything that had anything to do with computers. Dave says he was a perfectly honest kid, except when he was in front of one of those computers.
You're much more detached. I mean, you're just sitting at a computer. Like, you don't really, you can't make the same connection as, like, when you're sitting there at a computer breaking into another computer as you could breaking into someone else's house, even though it is the same thing. Like, it's just, there's no physicalness to it. It's all just via, it's all data. Like, if I were walking down the street, I saw a car was unlocked, I wouldn't go into the car and, like, drive away with it. But if I were sitting behind my computer, and I got into a computer that was not locked, I would not hesitate. Well, now I would. It's just a perceptual thing. Because you don't really make the connection to, like, computer trespassing is the same thing as trespassing. Like, it's just like a developmental thing. Like, I think, like, eventually most people here realize it and stop.
But it's not just a matter of age or outgrowing teenage vandalism. Hackers live in the cyberspace world, where right and wrong are not so clear. For example, it is perfectly legal in Canada to post a list of stolen credit card numbers on a computer bulletin board. That way, anybody with access to the information highway can see them. It's against the law to use them, but you can't get arrested for giving them away electronically. And this is only one gray area. The law hasn't begun to catch up with the new things hackers are doing every day. Mara Rosenberg turned 21 last week. She's one of only a handful of women at this conference. Mara describes herself as an honest hacker, but in cyberspace, it's difficult to define honesty.
In real life, we already have a set of ethics. You know, people pretty much know you don't rob a gas station or you don't rob a bank, or, you know, if you go into the car and you pull the emergency brake and you're on the hill, you're probably going to slide down the hill. But people don't know these things in cyberspace because it's a new field. It's, you know, you weren't born and raised there. You were born and raised with 2.4 kids and the picket fence and the dog. And so people know the ethics for quote unquote reality. But they don't know the way that cyberspace works.
Thank you, Mr. Vault. It is with much regret that I am unable to attend this most important conference. I'm currently a federal prisoner being held in Schuylkill, Pennsylvania, a convict. And while this fact remains difficult...
At 22 years old, Mark Abeen is possibly the most famous hacker in North America. He's known by his following as Fiber Optic. He had to come to this conference by telephone because he's in a federal prison in Pennsylvania. He's serving a year and a day for conspiracy to commit fraud on a telephone system. Before this, Fiber Optic boasted his computer hacking prowess on national television. He flaunted his exploits in Harper's, Esquire, and the New York Times. When authorities couldn't catch him in the act, they arrested him for conspiracy. Now, he's a martyr, the outlaw hero to almost everyone attending this conference.
In this horrible, spirit-breaking purgatory, one has plenty of time to think. I think back to my childhood when Saturday morning cartoon boys taught us that knowledge is power. They never warned us about getting too smart, that then we'd be considered a threat. We'd be made to look like criminals or even terrorists. That most dangerous lesson we would learn when we were older. Persecution and imprisonment of hackers is both mindless and pointless, and only leads to anger and resentment. If your motivations are genuine and your actions are noble, you can do no wrong.
Fiber Optic sounds more like a child caught with his hand in the cookie jar than he does a criminal serving time. And a number of people here think he doesn't belong in prison because he got pinned with conspiracy. That amounts to having incorrect thoughts. To them, he's a political prisoner in the war for freedom of information, the ultimate legitimization of their cause. Now they have a leader who they say was captured out of fear of those who might follow him. The imprisonment of Fiber Optic proves the establishment is cracking down on hackers. But at the Hackers on Planet Earth conference in New York City, that's a powerful incentive to keep doing it.
Yes, I am a criminal. My crime is that of curiosity. My crime is that of judging people by what they say and think, not what they look like. My crime is that of outsmarting you, something that you will never forgive me for. I am a hacker, and this is my manifesto. You may stop this individual, but you can't stop us all. The Mentor.
The more things say, the more they say the same. We can't close, we won't criticize or fail. The 60s were all failures, the 70s suck, but the clock 60 did the same hole. You 60 days realize, don't get rid of the boss. Won't eliminate, break the brain down the bank. Any kind of real change, make the time and work the shape. Shadows on a TV set. So why are we so eager to please? Rebecca decrees, so eager to please. Rebecca decrees, that's the same old thing.
That documentary was produced by Rodney Palmer.
Our first feedback. Okay. Welcome to Beyond Hope. You're supposed to applaud now. I want to give a special thank you to Garth Brooks for that wonderful concert last night. Garth, he's out there somewhere. I don't know exactly where he is. Last I heard, he was out in the network room trying to get his PC to work. We're here tonight to answer questions from the press. The conference officially starts tomorrow, but we're here tonight to sort of play around with our gizmos and get things working. A note from the network room. Connectivity will be available in a few hours. Probably overnight we'll be actually connected to the net. And the main Hope.net machine that you're all going to try to hack is going to be available tomorrow. So please be patient with that. If you're a volunteer and you want your volunteer badge, please do not ask Pam anymore because she will kill you if you ask one more time. They will be available again tomorrow when the conference officially starts. We have a big lineup of speakers and panels. We have a schedule. We just got back from Kinko's. So that will be available in the back, in the merchandising room, whenever it is that you want to look at it and see what's coming up. I can tell you briefly, tonight we'll be sort of playing around with this thing, with the World Wide Web. If there's anything you want to mess around with and show us, we have a PC there that we can sort of play around with and do things like that. We're going to take questions about 2600 coming up at around 9 o'clock, and we'll be playing some videos from 10 o'clock onwards. Tomorrow, though, when we start the official conference, Brock Meeks of MSNBC will be giving the keynote address. That's at noon, and we'll have all kinds of other panels throughout the day, including some secret stuff that you might not be aware exists on privacy, information on people. That'll be done by a real live private eye. Right here live on stage. We'll also have Bruce Schneier talking about encryption, the folks from the Loft, a live broadcast of Off the Hook at 6:30, being beamed out to all of the tri-state area. And we'll have some folks from Steal This Radio, which is the Lower East Side's first low-power radio station that has declined to get permission from the FCC. We'll have a lecture from Ira Winkler where hackers and criminals collide, all kinds of legal information there. GSM phones with fiber optic, Tom from England, and a couple of other expert types. I'm happy to announce that Bernie S. will be here.
Yeah.
He will be on a couple of panels, including one on dangerous legislation that may just throw you in prison for a couple of years, as well as a prisoner panel with Fiber Optic to discuss just what happens to hackers when they go to jail and how we can prevent such things. We'll also be tying into the conference in Holland. How many of you know there's a conference going on in Holland right now, too? This is probably the biggest hacker event ever in history because, A, we have a huge conference here, but, B, there's another huge conference someplace else, and we're tying them together. We connected to PictureTel last night to give their opening address. However, the sound didn't work very well, so they could see my face, but they couldn't hear what I was saying. But it's progress of sorts. We will have a very good network this time. If you recall, how many of you were at Hope 1 in 1994? Well, as you know, we only had a 28.8 connection, and most of the time that was being ping-flooded by somebody in the Midwest. So we have a 10 megabit connection this time, and we expect that to stay up a little bit longer. So that'll be, again, happening overnight. We'll be getting that hooked up to the network. So this could be a very historical conference in that it could be the first conference ever in the United States to actually have a working network that stays up. We're all hackers, so go figure. Okay, we have a bunch of people here today that come from all over the place. We have Veggie from CDC. We have Fiber Optic, who is making his first appearance at a hacker convention ever. From England, the notorious Cyber Junkie. Also from England, Zap. And former editor of Tap Magazine, Cheshire Catalyst.
Well, I'm the Cheshire Catalyst, and I used to be the press liaison for TAP as well as the editor, publisher, the guy that pasted it up, got it to the mailbox, a few other things. So I've gotten used to handling some of the questions from the press. And the one thing I just like to get across is all hacking is just hacking away at the computer keyboard until it does what you want it to do.
After that,
it's trying to keep that program running, getting it fixed. The true hacker syndrome is when you see a piece of software that doesn't work the way you think it should, and you try and tell the guy who's supposed to maintain it what it should be doing, and usually how to fix it. It's called bug reps, bug reports. And I wind up on the World Wide Web sending in these bug reps to people, some of whom have no clue what I'm talking about because they use some piece of software to write their web page, and they weren't really sure how to use that. So it's an interesting phenomenon to see all these newbies using all these sophisticated software tools, not really knowing what they're doing, and putting up some interesting things. But they're hacking. They're just hacking away at it until that's what they want it to do. So now part of the share the knowledge syndrome that I have as a hacker is to help get the word out to some of these people writing web pages. You've got graphics. They're good graphics, but don't forget the guys that can't see the graphics. The people using links, the non-graphic web browsers. My thing is information. If you go to my homepage, http://digital.net/TildeCheshire.
Can we go to that page?
You'll find that it's mostly text. There's very few graphics.
Can we go to that page, please?
Well, probably not immediately. Let me type it to you again.
I'm typing it.
Okay. http://digital.net/the-character, which is up next to the number one, but you have to hit the shift key to get there. Now, there's a lot of newbies. I do have to explain that too. I expect these folks here won't be that newbie, but after the tilde, it's Cheshire, C-H-E-S-H-I-R-E, slash will be a little faster, and it'll hit enter, and it should get you there. Now, one of the graphics I do have on my page I'm fairly proud of. Actually, if you want to put... okay, it's coming up now. Woo! Okay, what characters have been forgotten? Oh! Did I tell you to put www up there? I did not tell you to put www, because that's not how you reach it.
How did you get the error message on the side of a milk carton?
Well,
that's
this
really
is
cool.
The error message from Florida Online, digital.net. Yeah, this is the graphic. Okay.
I'd like to do something with a little anger in it, because I just like being angry. And one of my favorite targets of anger is Blockbuster Video. I don't know why. You know what I hate most about those people? They always greet you by name when you walk in the store, you know?
Yeah,
hi, Emmanuel, how you doing? It's like, what the f*** do you know me from? Shut up, leave me alone. I'm just going in here to get a video and just, you know, want to do this as quickly as possible. But, you know, when they know your name when you walk in, that's kind of scary. Usually they just greet you by name. I guess it's like some sort of a store type of policy that they have to do this. But I think it's annoying as hell. The other thing, they don't hand you the video. They put it on the table, and you have to, like, remember to take it as you walk past the... How many times have you walked out of Blockbuster and forgotten the video after paying for it?
Hey, Rebel, do you have an account there? We can see how many times you rent Porky's.
Okay, I'm going to call a Blockbuster at random. And there's no guarantee any of this is going to work. It probably isn't going to work. But I'm just curious, you know, how far I can get with this. I don't even know what I'm going to say, to be honest, but that makes it more fun.
Hello, thank you for calling Blockbuster Video. This is Josette speaking. How may I help you?
This is Mr. Foster. Someone called me before from this number about a late video.
And I don't understand how this could have happened because I haven't even been using my card in quite some time.
Okay.
Is this one there who can help me with this?
Sure. Your first name?
Last name Foster. First name Jim. Initial J. It might be under someone else's name in my family.
Okay.
And that could be just.
What last name is that?
No, it's the same last name. It could be a different first name, and to be honest, it could be a whole range of names.
Okay, so your address is?
I'm on 505 8th Avenue, but I'm not sure that's the address you have. You might have a post office box out in Long Island City.
Okay, now how many people are renting on this account?
Well, that's actually something I was hoping you'd be able to help me with, because I think the situation might have gotten a little bit out of control.
Okay, so the only Foster I'm getting is Chris, Harlan, Kimberly, Laura, and Megan.
Yeah, Kimberly, that's my ex-wife. All right, I need some information on this because I have a feeling that something's going on. Is there a late video on there? Is there an overdue amount?
Kimberly's account.
Oh, there isn't something on Kimberly, because I got a call from this number. I just got back from vacation. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be cross with you. I was hit with all this as I walked in the door. And I saw something from the Blockbuster saying there was a video late, but you say there's nothing on Kimberly's that's late.
No, and your name is?
My name is Jim. Jim Foster. We were Jim and Kimberly Foster at one point, but that's past.
Actually, I'm getting a John. I mean, is this the old address was 111?
That would be my son. If that's John at 111, yeah.
Okay.
What was the last video you show on that account? I can tell you right away
video
if that's him.
Was last time they were here was November 96.
Can you tell me what was rented?
It doesn't even say. We only keep a certain amount of movie titles until, like, I guess maybe 3 months or so. And since you haven't rented since the 97, hello? Since you haven't rented since 97, we don't have a history.
Okay, how about Kimberly, though? There's probably something more recent on hers.
No, this is Kimberly's account. John.
Oh, I thought you were looking at John.
Kimberly's account, and it has John allowed to rent on it. And from what I see, they haven't been renting since 1196.
I'm wondering if are you showing a late video on any Foster there? Are you able to look that up? Because I want to take care of this as quickly as possible.
The only Fosters I'm getting, like I said, is Chris, Harlan, Laura, and Megan, and Kimberly, which we just checked out her account.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of clean.
Yeah, Megan actually might be a possibility because that was a nickname. For my, believe it or not, my wife's sister. So it's quite possible they may have taken out a card on her name.
Okay, well, if they did, she hasn't been here since April.
Uh-huh.
And she's only rented one movie, and like I said, we only keep it for about 3 months or so, and her history is cleared.
Uh-huh.
But there's no movies checked out, nor is there a late fee.
Okay.
Now it's 333 East.
333 East. East what? That doesn't ring a bell. 333, I'm sorry, what was that?
333 East 80.
Okay, you know, that might be somebody else. This is starting to get even bigger because that's the address of a friend of mine who I suspected might be talking to my ex-wife before she was my ex-wife. And okay, this is starting. Yeah, this is really. I should probably go back to where I just came in from. All right, but you're not showing any overdue videos for any Fosters that you can see.
I can check again.
Yeah, please. You must. How many Fosters do you have, anyway?
I only have 5 Fosters.
Oh, that's not too bad. Okay, I thought there were.
Kimberly, we checked. You said we checked Megan. I'm looking up Chris.
Okay.
Chris hasn't been here. Okay, last time he was here was August. He just opened up the account. So everything he rented, he returned back on time. His account is paid up on.
Did you have a video on that one? Do you have a list of what was rented?
A list of what was rented? Johnny Bosco.
Really?
Sunday.
I'm sorry, what was the other one?
Johnny Brasco and Sling Blade, and they both came back on time.
Sling Blade, okay. I think that might be the one, actually, because there was some talk of that film. Okay, I think we may have found something there. Sling Blade. Okay, is that the same address on that one?
No, this one is a 408 address I'm getting.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that one either. Okay, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to check all my records, make a couple of the phone calls, and I might have some more questions later. What your name is?
Josette.
Okay, I might have a couple more questions concerning specifics on a couple of these people. I just want to track this down and make sure that this is up to date and that people aren't using my card against me and things like that.
Okay, your card. Do you have your Blockbuster card in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me right now. Well, if I call you back, would it help if I had that card number?
Yes, it would.
Okay.
Do you ever rent it from 79th and 2nd?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing, I've never been to the store. I've never been to that store, and all these people are parading in there, renting films left and right. And, you know, I'm over there in Europe, and I don't know what's going on here. I come back, and I get phone calls from Blockbuster saying I owe for late fees.
Okay.
So I just wanted to clear all this up.
Well, good luck.
Okay. I appreciate that. Are you able to tell me, by the way, were all those paid with the same credit card, or are they paid cash?
No, some of them are cash, some of them are credit. Depends on who's paying with what, you know.
Just one question, Kimberly. Was that a MasterCard?
Hello. I'm not really supposed to give out this much information.
Uh-huh.
And, like, especially address. Hey, how you doing?
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't want someone giving that information out about me, that's
no,
for sure.
No, she doesn't have a credit card account at all.
Okay, okay. That's one thing, at least. Okay, well, listen, I want to thank you very much for your help.
Okay,
very
good
helpful.
Luck, all right?
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Did you hear her saying hi, hello? Those were all the people walking in, you know. I hate that. Even when they're on the phone, they stop to say hello or whatever. Okay, so we know some things about some people. Yeah, I'm going to give Kimberly a call after this panel, and we'll talk about old times. So keep in mind, that was totally at random to a Blockbuster I've never heard of with a name I've never heard of. So imagine what you can do if you know the name of the person that goes to that particular Blockbuster. You have their address. You might even have their phone number. You can find out anything you want about them, what kind of videos they rent, what kind of credit cards they use, how late they are, how often they use the card. So you got to be careful out there.
You're listening to a special edition of Off the Wall. We're remembering the Hope Conferences. The Last Hope is coming up this weekend at the Hotel Pennsylvania in New York City, and more details can be found at www.hope.net. And now, let's take a brief look at some of the keynotes of Hope's past.
Anyway, thanks for your patience. I overslept since this is an ungodly hour, especially West Coast time, to be doing anything. As did my wake-up call, I might add. In case you haven't noticed, we are living in very interesting times. I thought it would be years before a mass backlash, if not outright insurrection, against the increasingly run-amok and arrogant corporate rule began, but it's already here, and it seems to be growing and growing and growing like some sort of prairie fire. Not since people came out of the woodwork from all walks of life to just say no to the Vietnam War, fight for civil rights, the environment, and feminism, etc., have this many people banded together for one thing against the wishes of our rulers. And like Vietnam, right now it's advantaged the other side. You know, the corporate world order, the World Trade Organization, IMF, World Bank, etc. They have the money, they have the power, they have the guns, they have the media. But that was the same situation people faced when a few lonely voices in the wilderness put down their rah-rah American flags and said, we should not be in Vietnam. We got to stop this. And it took a long time and a lot of hard work, but eventually the American people did stop the Vietnam War. And this battle against corporate rule is at least as important and will probably be at least as tough to fight. But like Vietnam, I think percolating out there, the numbers are there. Even among people we don't necessarily agree with on a lot of things, the same wedge issue applies. Why can't I put food on the table anymore? It's no accident that in Seattle, for example, one of the really cool things about that, the anti-WTO demonstrations last fall, was that people who would normally be derided as tree huggers or freaks or whatever were marching side by side people they would normally deride as rednecks or hard hats. Steel workers, unions, Teamsters, etc., who I might add were not marching with the protesters during all the protests against the Vietnam War. This is new and this is important. And this fight is going to go on, like it has already, both inside the system and outside the system. I think many people here have had at least some experience and inner glee fighting it from outside the system one way or another. And, both with Seattle and interesting little online pranks and United Students Against Sweatshops. That's pretty cool, I would say, if people band together and pressure their universities to quit making the rah-rah school mascot shirts in places that not even Kathy Lee Crosby can stomach anymore. And I think it's going to be very, very interesting outside the Democratic and Republican conventions coming up real soon. Although I am biting my nails after the Philadelphia police were shown in all their glory. Well, yeah, another person from Philly told me, well, yeah, of course they're going to go wild. People here don't care if it tarnishes the image of the city. They just don't care. And from within the system, even the most pro-Bush and pro-Gore punditoids are predicting the lowest election turnout in our history this fall. And which actually opens the door for real alternative parties to come in and make a bigger impact than if every brainwashed Democrat and Republican actually showed up, the Christian Coalition Nazi actually showed up to vote. Well, Jell-O is not a candidate for president anymore. See, I'm a member of the Green Party and went to their convention last June, and the Green Party nominated Ralph Nader. And there's a diverse group among the Greens, much more diverse than I expected, actually. And if you're going to build a real alternative to the Republicrats, you have to be willing to work with people you don't necessarily agree with on every single nitpicky issue. So now my job is to urge all of you to get off your butts and register and vote for Ralph Nader this fall.
Hi, first of all, I wanted to thank you for coming out and for being one of the regrettably small amounts of people in the mainstream media who doesn't assume they're writing for a bunch of idiots. And
at least assumes he's an idiot with everyone else.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask exactly how hard was that a decision to make? Like what pushed you in the direction that you decided to take?
Well, that was actually the easy part. I tell the jokes I like to tell. I tell the jokes that are funny to me. And to everyone else, it's a big deal. But to me, this is just what I think is funny. And so that part is the easy part. It doesn't get hard until you realize the whole world is looking. And you start getting death threats. And it's like, hey, maybe the jokes ain't that funny anymore. You know, it's like, you know, that's when you start really understanding the impact of what you're doing. The actual work itself is easy in terms of not the deadlines, but the concept, coming up with the concept, coming up with the characters, and saying, okay, this is the direction I want to go. That's the easy part. The hard part is when, you know, you're at the Image Awards and you're sitting four seats down from Condoleezza Rice, and she can remove you and your whole family from the face of the planet. And you have to go up there and make a joke about it. Well, you don't have to, but I wanted to. And it's like, all right, it's dangerous. You know, so that's the tough part. And it's scary. It's really scary to be in the public eye and to get death threats and to know that people hate you. And to know that, you know, fortunately, you know, the Bush administration, if Condoleezza Rice is any gauge, and I'd say she'd be a good one, you know, they're not worried about me. And nor, you know, realistically, nor should they be. I'm just a cartoonist. But, you know, there are frightening moments.
I'm just wondering, Yara, were you influenced at all by Bloom County?
Yeah, I love Bloom County. Bloom County, I think Bill Watterson is the best cartoonist, but Bloom County is actually, I think, my favorite strip.
Really?
Gary Trudeau would not like to hear me say that.
In particular, what do you think of Oliver Wendell Jones?
That's right. Oliver Wendell Jones was a hacker, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I liked Oliver Wendell Jones. Wow. Yeah, I actually really liked Oliver Wendell Jones. I mean, no, Burke was really clever. Think about the black characters in Bloom County, because there was Oliver Wendell Jones, and then there was Ronald Ann, who was named after Ronald Reagan. As a joke. No, they weren't. I mean, Burke really didn't get into racial politics very often. Did they ever make any Oliver Wendell Jones dolls? I know they did Opus.
No.
Ah, well.
I'm a ringer. I'm not actually a hacker. I work with a group of a sort of association for independent magazines, and
gotcha.
So I think about publishing a lot. But my question is, how do you see, what do you see as the internet, or not the internet, but people who work with the internet, what can they do to break the kind of syndications that you're talking about with comics? Like, what can the people in this room do for comics?
I just think if you're going to do something, don't worry about comics. Comics are a dot. Comics, a lot of print is dying. Slowly, but it's going away. You know, I'm at the tail end of this industry, and when newspapers go away, comics are going to go away as we know them, and that they'll metamorphosize into something else. You know, the problem with the internet is that people still haven't figured out how to make any money off online comics, and I know I'm not doing it for free. I mean, I did it for free early on because I had to, but then like, no, it's too much work. So
I'm thinking like in terms of the syndication though, in the large monopolies, what can be done?
Well, you know, the reason why the syndicates have all the power is because they have all the connections and resources. You know, with the major newspapers. And the major newspapers, I mean, there used to be two or three dailies in every city. Now there's maybe one. So I briefly toyed with the idea of self-syndicating the strip and found out it was impossible. Literally, some newspapers hide the individual who handles comics. So no one will know who he is. So they won't get flooded with all these submissions for comic strips and angry letters. You know, so... And the other problem is I don't know enough about the hacking world to know what you guys can really do. I wish I did. I hear stories, and I know what I see in movies. I saw War Games. Can you guys do that? No?
Delight to be here. This is the right place for me. I brought a hacker t-shirt with me that had binary numbers with your hand with number 4 on the front, but oh well. I kind of sorry I missed the lockpick session because it reminded me of a neat lockpick experience I had this year at my company. Somehow the alarm went off and the key to set everybody was the right people were gone. The key to unlock it was in a locked cabinet. How are we going to unlock this cabinet? I said, oh, give me a paperclip. So I took a paperclip and sat there with a screwdriver and first try, I got it.
Yeah.
And then I discovered it had been unlocked, and I had just locked it. And then I sat there for half an hour, and I couldn't get it open. Oh, well, what would life be? First of all, anyone here from Homeland Security Division, raise your hand, or any other three-letter agency? Okay. You know, you go through life, and if you're accomplished and you're successful, you can kind of go into a world and be around a lot of people that are CEOs and, you know, live an established life and, you know, good, strict rules, and we got it made. But for me, it was a lot different. Never really even wanted any of the success and all that. Just wanted to design neat computers. So for me, I've chosen that I'd much rather be around people like all of you, the people in my life, interesting people. You know, obviously we're a threat to everybody who's got money because we have so much of their money now because we're, you know, we know how to get it, right? And when you die, how are you going to value your life? Did you live it? Did you have a fun life? You know, you could say, well, I achieved this and I have this going on. And I'm trying to get this division of my company in shape and I have these clothes and title and salary and money and houses. Or did you have a ton of laughs every day with your friends and walk around telling jokes and were happy? Who had the better life, really? So that's us. Somebody today, I was talking to Cheshire and his great phone number. I'm a collector of neat phone numbers. It really started with a thing I had called Dial a Joke. You needed good numbers so you didn't get 2,000 wrong calls a day. And one of the numbers I had was 2211111. Why? A lot of us in this room were the kind of purists. 2211111, by the rules of assigning phone numbers back then, that was the shortest distance you could dial on a dial phone, if dial phones still existed. So it's kind of like a purism, why it was so much better. You could get no other number that only had two twos and five ones. Got a million calls on it all the time, and they hung up, until one day I was booking a flight, which turned out to be Pan Am. So the next time I got a call and I heard them start, I said, hello, and they started hanging up. I said, oh, you calling Pan Am? And the lady said, oh, yeah. I said, well, we're on our lunch break, so what can I do for you? Booked my first flight that day. After about a couple of weeks, I figured, the police are going to be, you know, triggered onto this and looking for who's getting people to go to the San Jose airport at 3 a.m. to catch flights that don't exist. So I started always telling people at the end of the call, I'm just joking. You know how hard it is to get people to believe that? They chuckle, and then they say, okay, how much is it for the ticket? No, I'm just joking. Well, so I started trying to stretch it out. Sometimes what we do is a little psychological game. How much can you get people to buy into? How far can you deceive them? So I started playing this game of the Grasshopper Special had the lowest flights. If you go through our lesser-used airports, and I would make up places like Billings, Montana, Moscow, Idaho, Amarillo, Texas, if you bounce around all these cities and get to your destination in five hops, your flight can be cheaper. Oh. And one day I told this guy, you go to Las Vegas, and you go up to our booth and roll the dice. If you get a 7, the next leg is free. And he bought into it. I started trying to sell propeller service flights, 30 hours to London. The guy wouldn't take it. But I did sell a 20-hour flight to New York. And so I got an awful lot of my good phone number stories. The one I liked the best, well, my 888-888. But I used to get calls on the phone I use at night, and it was somehow this. If you forgot to dial 1 before the free 888 numbers, which eventually came into existence, if you dialed the service called Bored Housewives, you'd get my phone in bed at 2 a.m. So what do you do? When a person calls you and they're off on a different tangent than reality, they think they have called Bored Housewives, but they've really called Steve Wozniak, well, what do? Their mind, to me, is in a creative state. Their mind has invented a story to me. And I want to see how far that creative state, you don't ever want to inhibit creativity, right? So the word to use is yes, whatever they say. You know, wrong numbers. Oh, I'm just a paramedic. I picked up this phone. Oh, is it a Bronco? Yeah. Is it a white Bronco? Yes. Is it by the reservoir? Yes. Where are you going? Oh, I don't know. I better hang up now. It's too much time on this call. So, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of people that don't really grow up with kind of a sense of humor that might be at somebody else's disadvantage in small ways. And I forget, there is a name for this. But those of us who've been down the paths we've been down, have an inborn curiosity. Really, it starts when we're babies. You take any baby, they're all hackers. Every baby is trying to push its way out of the crib, you know, crawling around, looking at every door, every cabinet, and trying to open it or touch things and knock them over. So they're all babies, and they kind of get taught by people what the rules are, where you can go, where you can't, what's the shape of your maze. But somehow God or nature, whoever makes us, has made us that way from the start. And a lot of us like to get pleasure from the unexpected. Well, what is a joke? Everyone grows up with jokes in every culture, and that's the biggest element of humor. You tell a story along one line, and the punchline is something you didn't expect, a different story that fit the words. And getting pleasure from the unexpected isn't that unusual. But like I said, there are some people that cannot laugh at jokes. Matter of fact, there are some people that hear a joke and they think it's the truth. We have dreams so often that we're trying to do the things that aren't supposed to be possible. Who would have thought in 1971 that if you put some tones into your own home phone, you could dial anywhere in the world? 1971, you couldn't reach the world. I mean, it was so expensive, nobody had much of the community outside their own local community, except maybe ham radio operators. Okay. Another thing is, you know, there's this element of what we're doing has some kind of learning, educational value. And it's largely because we're always trying to do the best. We're trying to outdo some other people. We're trying to find slip-ups they had in their code or things that they didn't think would work this way on a phone company. Searching and searching and searching. But it's really a way of saying, I did something more than someone else. I did the unexpected. So it's a way that we can somehow boast and socialize.
We've been listening to Memories of Hope on this, the Eve of the Last Hope, coming up this weekend in New York City. For more information on this historic hacker conference, visit www.hope.net, and we hope to see you there for the Last Hope. This is Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. I've enjoyed sharing these memories with you in the last hour, and we'll see you again in the future. Good night.
Posters peeling underneath last summer's morning glory vine. Old White had a stump of cigar, empty bottle of wine. Lay me down, Carolina, lay down. Don't want to wake up in the morning no more. Sing me one slow, sad song for this one last old time before they close a minstrel show. Banjo's got a broken string. Don't expect I'll get to fix it now. Won't be no more chance to sing. I'm rusty. Lay me down, Carolina, lay me down. Don't want to wake up in the morning no more. Sing me one slow, sad song for this one last old time before they close the minstrel show. Daddy Bones is dead, I guess. You probably don't know or care. Frank and Arch has gone away somewhere, I don't know where. Lay me down, Carolina, lay me down. Don't want to wake up in the morning no more. Sing me one slow, sad song for this one last old time before they close the minstrel show. The money and the crowd run out before left the last town. This old show done played its run and rung the curtain down.
Lay me down, Carolina, lay me down. Don't want to wake up in the morning no more. Sing me one slow, sad song for this one last old time before they close the minstrel show.
Don't know where we go from here. Come to that, I just don't care. Maybe we go to a better place. The minstrel show will be there.
Lay me down, Carolina, lay me down. Don't want to wake up in the morning no more. Sing me one slow, sad song for this one last old time before they close the minstrel show.
Yeah, this is Finn, and this is Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Make sure you guys check out the Hope Conference at the Hotel Pennsylvania this weekend. Should be a blast. I'll be there.